Okay, good morning, everybody. Let's make a start then, shall we? Welcome to second of the ARG GPF joint meetings. Hopefully we're going to have a lively discussion. One thing to do before I hand over to David. David's going to be with us for 10 minutes, so hand the floor to him for that time. Then we're going to go on to discuss the agenda. Alan will talk about the changes which we announced yesterday and give you an opportunity to debate that. Firstly, though, we've got one new member of the ARG, Dennis, over there. We won't go around the table if you don't mind, as we've done that before, but... And I think we've got two new members of the GPS.
Yes, exactly. Greg Nelson from IDM US and Joe Gill from BNP in France.
And Dennis, analyst at UBS, being very helpful for us in facilitating meetings with investors, spoke at our conference yesterday, so we're very grateful to him and for his time with the ARG. But David, you've got limited time with us. So. I think we need to press the mic as well,
Thanks, Steve. I hope I'm not going to trample over what Alan's going to say, but I just wanted to give you the background to certain things that have been going on recently. As you know, our work program is predicated on the basis of the G20 requests. And these have been fairly strong requests to try and complete the work program by 30th June next year. And there's several reasons for that. First of all, the fact that the G20 just wants it done. A lot of the banking regulation, they believe, is going to be on the back of accounting, and therefore they want the convergence program completed by June 30th. Convergence will never happen when you've got 17,000 pages on one side and 2.5 on the other, so it'll never be identical, but it's to get some of the main issues the same is what the target is. The other reasons for the deadline is the fact that next year some of the major Asian economies are moving towards IFRS. Korea and India have set dates for transition. The Japanese Accounting Standards Board is bringing its standards to converge with us. It'll be converge, not adoption, but the Japanese government will make a decision in 2012 about the adoption of IFRS. They already allow an option that domestic companies can use IFRS on the Tokyo Exchange, and one or two, we believe, are already using it, and more will be going in the future. The view really is that Japan's decision is virtually made. Of course, America will make a decision next year. And that's another reason. It's part of the conditions. They want to see how far we've got with convergence by June 2011. We've also got a whole lot of countries going in 2012. We've got other Asian economies, Malaysia, Indonesia, Singapore, and in the Americas, we've got Mexico going, and Canada goes next year. So they don't want to change twice. Can you just please finish this and leave it alone? So that's been really the pressures to try and get this work program done. Now, one of the things that we've been looking at is we have to space the exposure drafts, otherwise I'll come out with a great heap of proposals all at once, and you just won't be able to cope, and therefore we won't get good responses, therefore the standards won't be as good as they could be. And as we watch the delays start to mount up, we realise unless we get some of these out in the first quarter of this year, we're going to have a problem. Well, we didn't. And we've been looking at Plan B for some time. Now, unfortunately, press reports about the beginning of this month talk about the programs delayed. That really wasn't what we were talking about. The US is a particular problem, as it has actually got more exposure drafts to put out than we have. They've got one big one out, as you know, on financial instruments. They haven't done anything on consolidations. We have. So they've two big ones that we are not issuing at present. So when we spoke to them, we came to the conclusion that basically we couldn't have more than three or four out at once. Otherwise, you just simply wouldn't be able to give us the answers. And that meant we looked at the work program, and what we decided was things that are important but not critical, frankly, we'll just push them aside and leave them. And what we've really done is look at what is important and how can we do this with leaving you just three or four at once. In our case, it'll be no more than three. So what we've done is we met with the US and we went through the projects. Now, consolidation, let me take that one first. We're pretty well ready to publish the final standard. We've got agreement with them on structured investment vehicles, special purpose vehicles. The area we haven't got agreement, though the boards are coming to agreement, is on the voting entities, voting subsidiaries. And the view that we have, most of the world has, if you control something, you consolidate. Well, in the US, it's 50% plus one of equity. And for 20 years, they've tried to get rid of that and haven't succeeded. So this isn't a minor issue in the States. What we're going to do is we're not going to wait anymore. We've waited long enough. We're going to finalize this standard. They're going to work with us to finalize it, and then they're going to have to make their minds up whether they're going to put that out as an exposure draft. But we're going to go ahead. So we will publish that in the autumn. Derecognition, we put out an exposure draft to simplify IAS 39. I think much to the board's surprise, the simplification, which was continuing involvement, was not supported, but the alternative was, which was when you sell something and you've got an option to buy it back, you just show the option with disclosures. And we've been working at that to operationalise it. Now, that's going to mean a lot more going off balance sheet than it does at the moment, which doesn't go down well with the regulators. And the other problem is it's taking us away from US GAAP. So we discussed that with them, what they would do. They felt that a lot more was needed to look at this model, and certainly this was not the time to launch it. And at the same time, we were getting comments back from the national standard setters, particularly in the UK and France, that the derecognition under IAS 39 worked very well in the crisis. But where it was defective was it hadn't such good disclosures as the Americans. Well, what we've decided to do is, given that the US has just abolished QSPEs and changed their derecognition to move it nearer to our present model, is we're going to stay with our present model, but we're going to increase the disclosures, which we've already exposed. So we'll publish that in the autumn in final form. And that'll be it for the meantime. The US is going to watch what happens in the US with their changes. And in 2012, we'll have to decide whether we want to amend the thing or not. But that's what we're going to do. We're going to do disclosures. And that's what the standard setters are telling us they want to do. Financial statement presentation. There is a big project on that, as you know. We don't feel it's ready yet. While we could put it out, this is something that will probably be there for 20 years. We know that CFOs and CEOs have got concerns about the direct method of cash flow. The balance sheet is very complicated now. Is the cohesiveness principle too dominant in this model? And what we've decided, this isn't the moment when people are struggling to answer our other questions to launch this thing. It's not that important. It is important, but it's not critical. And what we will do is we will come round and keep asking you to see if we can refine this thing before we go out with an exposure draft. So, in a way, that's pulled back. But the one we do believe we've got to go ahead with is showing on the same page the P&L account and other comprehensive income. And the reason for that is that we had a big debate in this board over pensions. We're going to remove the corridors, and then that means you have to show the changes in the pension fund in the accounts. Now, quite a lot of the board wanted that to go through P&L. Other members of the board did not. They believed that this was going to distort the net profit number, and therefore it should be shown in other comprehensive income. Well, the compromise was, okay, we'll show it in other comprehensive income, but this is so important, people should see it. As they look at net profit, they should be aware of what's been happening in the pension fund. Therefore, they wanted it on the same page. So that was one reason. The second reason is we're not sure what's going to happen on financial instruments, which I'll come to in a minute. But we do have differences with America, and the differences are mainly reflected in other comprehensive income. So if we're going to have to do some reconciliation statement, if we just can't agree in the standard, we're going to have to use that statement very prominently. And that deals with the Japanese strategic investments, which we have in other comprehensive income. This was designed to deal with the Japanese cross-holdings companies that buy into each other and have held these shares for 40 years or something. And we understood the Japanese arguments that if you showed the changes in trading profit, that really was a bit of a distortion. So we put it in other comprehensive income. But if we're going to reconcile with the US, we're going to have to bring that back out on a separate statement. So we wanted it to be clear. We're also looking at gains and losses on own credit, which also goes through other comprehensive income. So that's another reason that we'd have to reconcile with the US. And of course, the US are putting a lot of fair value changes that we're not going to show in other comprehensive income too. So there's lots of reasons for this. And that's why both boards think this is the bit that really is urgent and we must put this out. So we're not changing anything apart from just so you can see net profit. We're not changing net profit. Just putting the sequential order of the statements. Profit and loss first, other comprehensive income following it. All those should be done this year. The other one, liability equity, those of you who've seen the draft will realise it's based very much on IAS 32. We haven't had a lot of complaints about IAS 32, except it's a bit difficult to read. The new draft was going to try and make it less complicated, trying to make it more principle-based, but broadly getting the same answers as 32 with one or two little tweaks. The FASB thinks that there may be complications they haven't realised in the United States, and they want to go and explore that much more thoroughly. So we're quite happy with 32, so fine, they go away and explore it, we'll just leave 32 there. So that's one we won't do. We'll just wait till we get feedback from them, and if we have to change 32, we'll change it. But it won't be a major change. The next ones are two. There's not a lot of change to be done. Fair value measurement, we expect to publish the final standard in the first quarter of next year. Next week, we'll put out a very small exposure draft, just dealing with one of the disclosures, which we didn't expose, and we thought we ought to. The Americans are putting out a much fuller exposure draft with the changes that we propose to FAS 157. And the idea is we're word for word the same at the end of this. So they agree with the changes that we're proposing, but they have to obviously expose them too. So the idea is they expose much more than we do. We just expose a little bit, and then we meet and try and get this out early next year. Pensions, that's ours and our own. We're moving closer to the US by removing the corridor approach. And that again will be published, I suspect, in the first quarter next year. That leaves us with four other projects. Revenue recognition, which we published yesterday, is a key one. It brings together IAS 11 and 18, gets rid of some of the inconsistencies we've got, but massively reduces the complexity in the American requirements. And that will be out, that is out for, what, 4 months, I think it is. And then, we have to finish that by June next year. In a few weeks' time, we'll publish leasing. At the last week, the board's got much closer to agreement than we expected. We're pretty well united on lessee accounting. Leases will be on balance sheet unless they're short-term. And on lessor accounting, we are coming coalescing towards an agreed model. And that again is another one. The SEC is particularly concerned that one comes out. So we've got to try and get that done again by June 2011. For most of you, that'll be the only two that we're really doing. There'll be two big exposure drafts, one you've just had published yesterday and this one, which will be next month or early August. Insurance, we have to publish this because there's so many changes in the board coming up. We just feel insurance is so complicated. We can't ask a new board to start from scratch on this thing. And we've said to the Americans, you have an insurance standard. We have not. We have to go out, whether you're there or not. And they will make their minds up whether they will put out an exposure draft or not. But we will go regardless. Financial instruments. You'll probably hear more about this today, but as you know, the US has come out with a completely different proposal to us. We could possibly reconcile on the net asset level and on the net income level, but the question is, ideally we'd have one single standard. Now, can we do it? They were a split vote, 3-2. And if you read the dissents preferred IFRS 9. So we don't know whether the reaction to the American exposure draft will push them towards us or not. We just have to wait and see. If it doesn't, we'll have to try and do some form of reconciliation so you can move from one to the other. But we also want to reconcile provisioning, where they've come out with an upfront loss model, which looks at present conditions, but we're looking at expected loss, which is also dealing with the future. We're going to go much further on hedging, not just simplifying the effectiveness test, but also enabling you to hedge hedges so that if you have a dollar derivative, you could then hedge it back to the euro so you don't have the currency effect or whatever you want to hedge it back to. And also looking at non-financial hedges to try and make those easier to account for. And this is what Peter will like, making it much more transparent by using the mechanism for cash flows, so you will actually see what has been pulled out of profit in the hedging gains or losses, and then recycling these obviously afterwards. So that's the program. This year, consolidations, derecognition will be out. We will try and finalise the profit and loss account and other comprehensive income on the same page. Liability equity, we're happy with that, we'll stay. Early next year, fair value measurement and pensions. And then the four that we've got to try and finish by June 2011, leases, revenue recognition, financial instruments, and insurance.
So you said liabilities?
We haven't decided what we're doing in 37 yet. We've got comments coming in, but the three new board members, so we've got to discuss it again. So we'll wait and see. These are the priorities, though. Any questions? Or vanish? Well, hopefully that makes it easier for you. We haven't given up on financial statement presentation. That's the one that we were going to do a lot more consulting with. I mean, our view internally was that if we'd issued that as an exposure draft, it would have crashed and burned, quite frankly. And we would rather make sure that we come out with an exposure draft as a good win behind it and a fair chance of succeeding, because this could be here for years after that. Mary?
David, you mentioned the notion of
reconciling. Press the mic so Jane can hear us. You
mentioned the notion of reconciling from one to another on the financial instruments. What is the board's view on reconciliation? Under what circumstances the ISB and the IFASB will decide the reconciliation is warranted? As you pointed, many other projects where you may be taking different views, for which you didn't mention the consolidation will be provided. Is there a philosophical notion to that, or is it an ad hoc decision?
Sorry, Stephen. Basically, what has happened, Mary, is this one I think is so important that all the regulators want us to try and get the same standard. They don't say the same things about the others. And if you talk to the SEC, who have approved this program, they've said it's going to make no effect on their decision next year. You probably saw their statement. The regulators, the G20, this is the one they keep saying, you've got to try and get it the same. So if we can't, and I don't think the board has any appetite for going for full fair value. And our outreach and feedback gives us exactly that answer. While we hear the users in the US want fair value, that is not the feedback we get. And if you want to mention that, Pat, that you've been looking at the users in the States, and we're not hearing that.
Certainly, we're not getting a strong indication that there's a large appetite for fair value balance sheets for financial instruments. Most analysts feel they need both the amortized cost and the fair value information, and it varies as to analysts which one wants the predominant information, but they want both, it's clear.
Any other points? Okay, well, if you excuse me, I've been out of the office for almost 3 weeks now. We've got to try and catch up with what's there. I've got several meetings this morning. Well, thank you very much. Sorry I'm leaving you. Thanks, Jan.
Thank you, Willis, for being with us.
Alan, you're there. I was looking for you over there. So, anything you want to add to David's comprehensive description of what we're doing?
As is usual. I think David took all my words away. So there's not a lot left to say. It's the overall picture is that we've tried to create a focus on three core projects: insurance, RevRec, and leases. And sure, there are some other projects in there, some bits and pieces, but they're the three big ones, and we've tried to clear the decks on everything else. And in some cases, well, you know, people, the difficulty is every time we go to a different forum, we go to something like Standards Advisory or the IFRS Advisory Council, and there's another little project that we must do. You know, Malcolm just asked about IS 37. You know, of course, there's something that's important for everybody on this as well. So we still have the business as usual to try and tick things along, including annual improvements and things like that. But the main focus is on the three. David didn't mention we also have investment companies. We're trying to we're going out with an exposure draft, and the idea would be to exempt investment companies from consolidation. It's an issue that's been it's a big difference between us and the US and Canada, for example. And the US are going to see if they can get rid of all of their auditing-related guidance and come down to a principle that they can apply in US GAAP that we could work with in IFRS. So we don't know what the outcome will be there, but that's an exposure draft during the third quarter. We've also added one aspect to the financial instruments project is asset and liability offsetting. One of the biggest differences between us and US GAAP is the way you offset financial assets and liabilities. And so we're looking to get an exposure draft out in the fourth quarter to see if the boards can actually converge on that or harmonise. So it's an easy thing to do, you know, because easy to get an exposure draft out almost saying, well, let's go to the US model, let's go to the IFRS model. The difficulty is the answer, because I think most people in the States say, you should just do what we do, and people in Europe are saying, no, you should do what we do. And that's a challenge with us. So it's reading in the Financial Times, apparently all we need to do is to work more closely together to reach converged solutions. So I don't know what that means for financial instruments. Is that, you know, how we go a bit closer to their fair value and they come a few steps back? But I'm not sure if there's an appetite for that. I don't think there's anything else in here that David's missed out, but really I think Peter and I can answer, and obviously Jan and Stephen can answer questions about any of the specific projects on here.
One thing I'd like to add is on the FSB. We are going to be very active in this project. It's not gone away. The board has actually finalised the ED that we would have issued. It's all done. We've done the full re-deliberation. We've got all the words. My understanding is that will be put up on the website as a staff draft.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of the day. I'm pretty sure it's either Wednesday or Thursday next week. It's supposed to be up as a staff draft. And what we're just doing is finalising our outreach plan, because instead of going out and saying, give us comments, we're going out with, we need to get more information about direct cash flows, about cost of implementation, about whether people understand the cohesiveness principle, or whether we need to think about the reconciliation process a bit more carefully, and also financial institutions in particular. We know we struggled a bit with some of the examples to demonstrate how this relates to that. So this is information gathering to feed back into the drafting, and at the moment the plan would be about February next year to go out with an ED based on all the input we receive.
So we've got a fairly extended period of outreach, field testing, so we're going to be talking to all of you, I guess, at some point over that period, and you know, seeking further advice. But so it's far from gone away. And we will be very active.
Just one small thing too. One of the issues that we struggled with in the joint statement with the FASB is that if you ask the FASAC, I think in the US, many of the members, the advisory group said this was probably the most important project that they could do. And so when we're saying that we need to prioritise and get the most important aspects done, this was actually a very high priority for a lot of groups. And I think if you ask the ARG, you'd probably find that it's probably a higher priority than it would be for the global preparers. That would be my intuition. And so we can't just make a sweeping statement to say that we've prioritised everything that everybody agrees to. This is very, very important. And if anything, one of the views is that as David said, we were troubled that this might actually sink as a project. The outreach is designed to actually save the project, if anything, to make sure that when we do go out with an ED, that it's not at risk as an ED.
But there's also a very important timing question. I mean, we are changing a couple of things, leasing, pensions, revenues, etc. Should you at the same time change the presentation, or should you first make, of course, the basic standards and then decide on the presentation? So that will also be one of the things we will analyze.
Alan, I think perhaps you could
press the mic.
Could you update us on where you stand on both income taxes and joint ventures? There's the footnotes I see in this document. Perhaps you can explain what they are.
I'll leave Peter to income taxes. He knows he's close to that project than me. JVs at the moment, I've got a meeting at 2 o'clock this afternoon to go through some of the consequential amendments. We had hoped to start the balloting process, that's our voting process, forward by the end of the month. So we're looking at Q3 to get that whole package out.
And on income taxes, the scope is cut back very significantly from what was exposed last year. There are two main issues that we intend to look at. One is to do with property revaluations. And there the board has sensitively decided to set up an exception, and we're looking at the best ways to implement that. The other issue they wanted to look at is uncertain tax positions. And what we're planning to do is to look at that when the debate over IS37 is settled down. Now, obviously, there's some uncertainty, I think, about how long that would take, and so we'll need to look at the timing of that. But we're planning to come back to the board either in July or, I think, more likely in September with more detailed plans on how to progress income taxes. But at the same time, there were a few small areas that were put in the ED that most of the commentators were reasonably happy with, and so we picked some of those up as well because they seem fairly uncontroversial.
Can you give us more color on IAS 37 and where you're at? Don't have the previous plan in front of me, but it looks like it may have called for a final standard this year to a final standard in the first half of next year. And can you give us some color of where you are in that project, maybe thought processes about a possible final standard in the first half of next year, maybe a re-exposure of the issues?
Sure. The current deadline was in towards the end of May, I think, and we're analysing the comments, and we plan to bring the analysis to the board in September, and at the same time we'll look at the alternatives. I mean, broadly speaking, it's pretty clear that the ED wasn't that popular, and so I think we'll be looking at all the alternatives from, you know, it's the full spectrum really, from drop the project entirely to continue with everything and raise things in between. We wouldn't expect detailed discussion at the board at the September meeting. That would be more kind of strategy, working out what sort of direction do we think the board should go in for the next round of discussions. Clearly, how long that will take, what the end product will be, that, you know, we'll have to see how that discussion goes in September.
I don't expect it fast tracking. That's my view.
That's what I was just trying to read in. I know there'd be a delay, but then when I saw IFRS in the first half of next year, was wondering if I should read something into that. I could see where you could possibly leave it blank, actually, with a footnote that you're looking at it. But maybe I'm reading too much into an IFRS. Just wondering if I was reading too much into a final IFRS in the first half of next year.
Other comments? Go on, Sharon.
Just a question on the hedge accounting. Is your intention with the next exposure draft to cover the portfolio hedging, or just to cover general concept of hedging for industrial companies and commercial companies? Because for banks, portfolio hedging is absolutely essential to see in what condition hedging principle can be applied.
The intention is for it to be a comprehensive ED, so yes, it will. But obviously, these are difficult, complex areas, and the board has got some way to go in its discussions. And in particular, we haven't started on portfolio hedging yet. So obviously, it's dependent upon how those discussions go, but the intention is a comprehensive ED.
quick question on FST. This concept of a staff draft. I haven't heard of this concept before for other projects. Is there a precedent for that? And what's the mission of that type of document?
Two things to that, Dane. The closest, most recently, we put in a extractive activities discussion paper out on the website. We didn't want to have a 9-month exposure period, but people were asking us what the thinking of the research group was, so we put it on the website. It then was able to be used by many people in conferences. They started to get their thinking together about that. It meant that when we did any outreach, they had something that they could discuss because they had some concrete, I'll call them proposals, and then we were going to use any feedback to update the DP, but nothing happened in terms of people seemed to be reasonably comfortable with what was stated in the DP. So we then opened up the comment period once we got to the, I think, 6 months after that. So the idea for this is that when we go out and start to talk to banks about financial institutions and presentation, start to talk to people about direct cash flows and what the reconciliations might look like, they've got something they can actually discuss in context of. It's not just some abstract notion based on, I guess, a few board papers. They actually see what the proposals look like. And so it gives us, I think, just enriches the conversations. So we haven't done this before with this, what looks like a bit more formality, but we've done it informally with IFRS 9, with consoles. We had staff drafts made available quite early in the process, so when we did discuss it, people could actually see where the thinking was heading.
I think, Dan, that the whole idea is that people can actually see the words, so direct method cash flow, exactly what have we proposed on that, or what's our current thinking on that. Obviously, that may well change for the ED proper, but if it was just some vague notion based on board papers, then I don't think we'd really get the feedback that we're looking for. So it's a basis for the outreach, a basis for the field testing. That's the idea.
So basically, all the preliminary decisions, made by the boards up to this point, then back in play?
Well, everything's in play until the final standard's issued, isn't it? So.
Would you like me to read you the disclaimer at the front of the ISB update?
No, but ultimately, certain things where the boards have, kind of voted on at this point. I mean, could one interpret this as potentially, think about insurance before the, the ISB came into formal existence. We had the insurance project, but then once you had the new board, then, they decided to kind of go a different path. Well, with the ISB, we have a lot of ISB members turning over, obviously, in June. So based on the way the timing of this project is working, one scenario you can ultimately see is, to some degree, you could see where, everything is kind of open for redebate and then, thus pushing it back potentially a long time. And as you mentioned, for a lot of user groups, this is a pretty important project. So just curious.
Well, as David said, we're trying to give the project the greatest chances of success. That's why we're doing it.
I would sort of view this as a dress rehearsal for an exposure draft. And it's sort of like the first exposure draft. And I don't think there's any more probability of the decisions changing with this draft than if we had put it out as an exposure draft. I think it would have been equally as possible and probably more likely that things would have changed as a result of an exposure draft because of misunderstandings about what we're trying to say. So this really gives us an opportunity. It's a dress rehearsal to see whether we got the words right, whether the words really convey what we meant, if people understand what we mean and are happy with it and comfortable with it. So it's, I view it as a dress rehearsal for an exposure draft.
Could I just add, I guess we welcome that you're taking time. It is an important project. Sometimes, though, there's a feeling that, you get all this input and you still go in one direction, and we're not always sure why you've concluded that's the right direction to go. So could we ask you you know, since you are taking a little bit more time, perhaps to, you know, always heated debate about cash, direct cash flow, why you end up concluding going in one way. So could you perhaps explain to, you know, the preparers community or the users community, whatever the point of view that you're hearing from that community, why, despite taking everything into account, you've gone in one direction. So a little bit more, well, you know, so that we can really see that you really have duly considered and taken into account all the different conflicting views.
Okay. This document will include the basis.
Yes, it will.
So there is a detailed explanation in there about how we've ended up where we have. The point is that where we've ended up is not the same as the discussion paper. So we don't want to go into the massive detail now, but it is a different position. One of the problems, of course, is labels, indirect, conjures up different things for different people, and I think you'll be able to see the exact words pretty soon, and you'll be able to see the basis pretty soon as well as to why we concluded as we did. It's an emotive area, it's a difficult area, wide spectrum of views, quite different views from users and preparers. We're going to discuss in part shortly a particular aspect of it that we thought would be useful, and no doubt we'll come back to it again in the ARG and GPF probably more than once over the coming period, and will the words stay the same as they are now for the actual ED? Possibly. Maybe they'll change. Will they be the same then when we get to the final standard? Maybe they'll change again. So we've got a lot of debating to be done on this, and hopefully in the end we will end up with an answer that provides high-quality information for investors and is appropriate from your perspective as well.
I think it's likely that the document will change between what we have now and what will be the exposure draft. Either that we change the content of the standard, or that we have a better base for saying why we have gone down a certain avenue. And during this coming month, we hope to have extensive interaction with users, preparers, anyone involved in this. And either we will make conclusions on the standard and say, okay, we did this wrong, or we'll have a better base for saying we did the right thing.
There we go.
Just an observation. I think the concept of how you go about it does make sense, right? I think to Dane's earlier point, I think that the whole purpose of an exposure draft or a pre-valid exposure draft is to get feedback. And feedback, in many cases, could reaffirm existing decision or can change existing decision if you get meaningful feedback that leads you to believe otherwise. This is the notion of exposure draft. So in that regard, I don't see it serving any different purpose. What I do want to point out is the notion of time, right? So regardless of how you go about it, I think every project would be useful if it's complemented with a robust timeline. This is what we expect to do by a particular date. Jan made the comment about timing, which is reasoned as well, right? You don't make too many changes at concurrent time, which is clearly appropriate from a prudent decision point, from my perspective, absolutely. But what's coupled with this is some sense of what will be the timing. And just some flashbacks, going back to David's comments, is a discussion paper about liabilities and equity that the FASB has published back in 1980. And frankly, there's been a discussion paper that was almost there, went back to serve as a discussion paper, but it served somewhere as a discussion memorandum, had the same elements of IS 39 and the same issues discussed being discussed today, with the only distinguishing factor that it was relegated to a discussion paper, and since then 30 years passed by. So I think the concept makes sense, but I think coupled with this should be some communication from the board. What's your timing expectation on resolving differences, and when you expect to issue something being what it is? And I don't know if there's a, in conjunction with what you're doing, you've articulated the expected timeline.
I wonder if I can just comment on that, and maybe you want to answer that beforehand. Is I think we've seen that on the board's constituents, there is significant disagreement or debate on this issue. So I'd just like to counter these couple of comments of why do we want to rush something that is such different input into the item. What I see is that you've got a calendar that says a final statement in the second half of next year, so that supposedly is what you're shooting for, and you've described that. I just want to take exception to these 30-year references or 20-year references in the project. I'm one proponent that thinks that things can be done quicker, but when there is a significant disagreement by people of what the appropriate way is forward, the best thing to do is to debate it at length, and this one is one that has significant disagreement if this is the proper way to go forward. I understand both sides, but it seems like you'd want to debate it and not look at this as and I don't look at it as some kind of signal that it's being put off forever. So I just think there needs to be some prudence, especially given the disagreements on this issue, and you've had published that you're shooting for the second half of next year for a final standard, so I think you have a plan in place. I just wanted to make that based on the previous two comments.
Any other comments on timing?
Have you reached to any decision on the effective dates of the new coming standards? Because it's very critical for the companies moving towards the IFRS in the future.
No, we're publishing we're going to publish a separate paper again for consultation in about September. And that's to have a look at to see how we should handle effective dates for these. We have stated publicly that none of these things will be in effect before 1 January 2013, but we might need longer for some of them. And the question we'll be asking is whether we should put some of these projects together and have an effective date, whether we should push some out a little bit further in some cases, and whether we should allow early adoption. It's more problematic for us because than it is for the FASB, because we've got countries coming on board and they may, if we say 2013 and they want to go in 2012 and just go that 1 year early, it's pretty hard for us to say, no, that's not a very good idea. We'd rather you change twice. So we have to ask those questions. And that's around about September. Because the FASB typically has produced a standard and said, and you do it now, and no early adoption, but they have very short adoption periods, and whereas we're looking at much longer lead times to allow people to prepare.
If I may just add something else on the sort of feedback of the, it's good that you're going to include the basis of conclusion, but I've heard from people I've been talking to, mainly on the preparer's side, they're saying, well, it would be nice to have not just the qualitative comments, but also some summary of the quantitative comments, for or against certain arguments. And, I can well understand from your point of view that some of the quantitative comments, you could say they're just photocopies of somebody else's comments, and perhaps you don't want to count them all fully or whatever. But I think when we were explaining some your decision process to our CFOs, it would help if some of the CFOs say, well, what sort of feedback do we get on a given direction? How is it if sort of 90% of the respondents have one direction to be followed, despite that you come up with the minority point of view? So is there any way you could to help us to even defend your point of view and say, well, look, they are doing a good job taking all relevant facts into account, that you could also somehow give us a bit more quantitative overview of the comments you receive.
As a policy, our board is not comfortable with doing quantitative analysis where it does come to votes. And in IFRS 3, business combinations, I think we had 97 essentially photocopied letters from cooperatives. And so we counted that as being a collective view from the cooperatives, because there's a difference. To me, there's fundamentally no difference than having the parent organisation send in a view on behalf of all the co-ops, then tell each of the co-ops to send in the same view. And so it gets very difficult for us to do that. But where I think we can be very helpful is to, I think it's helpful, you may disagree, is for us to do some sort of analysis almost by type. And I'm going to take a big risk here, but in terms of presentation of OCI, or whether you have a single statement of comprehensive income, it seems that there was more support from the analyst user community than there was from the preparer community, and that's a sense you can convey. In fact, it was
a very strong majority of the use community was very much in favour of a single statement, whereas it was not the same flavour amongst the preparers. And it's helpful to understand which particular groups have got strong views one way or the other. That's what we're trying to do more of. And I would tend to use, you know, words that give you a sense of overwhelming, clearly or strong support, etc. So you get a sense, but saying whether it's 73% or 75% I don't think it's helpful to us either.
I think perhaps we could give a bit of flavour if there's a regional deviation in the point of view, I think we would welcome, some of our CFOs would welcome having a bit more. You know, they're used to dealing in figures, and they like to see quantified, quantification. So they would be helpful.
Take a look on some of our board papers, and they are, as you know, public, and they're available for as observer notes. In them, I think you find rather much what you're asking for. We have a problem, for example, with, let's call it a representative organization, collecting opinions from 28 countries, for example, and it's one letter. Is that sort of one opinion, or is it 28 opinions, or 50 companies in a business organization, etc.? So it's very hard. I think the staff summaries are actually rather good. And quite often they point out that academics didn't like it, or North America didn't like it, etc. So take a look there and give us a bit of feedback and see how you think we can improve it. I don't think you will get statistics.
And Malcolm, to me as a board member, it's not the quantity of input one way or another. It's the quality of the argument for or against the proposal. There's been situations where one well-reasoned argument has had me change my view totally about a project. Just one out of the 100 that we got. So it's more the quality of the argument, the logic behind it, and the soundness of the argument, I think, than the number of those arguments that we get.
Well, clearly that's a fair point. But I fully understand the challenges you have in the quantification and how you weight the opinions of any given company or organization. But perhaps, let's see what is in the basis of conclusion. But as I say, you have to help us defend your points of view with our CFOs, and that's certainly one factor the CFOs look at is, you know, how representative is your outcome compared to the majority of financial service companies or non-financial service companies, for example.
Well, one thing we're doing as well, we've talked with as a team about whether we make the analysis more accessible in a way, because, you know, as Jan said, they are in the observer notes, but of course you'd have to know which particular board meeting went to and what the paper reference was to find it. They're all on the website, but we thought maybe what we ought to do is to make a summary comment letter, not analysis, but a comment letter summary, which gives you the demographics and just gives a very high level. Because just our process normally is that we aim to get a summary of our comment letters to our board as soon as practical after the deadline. That's normally about 5 to 6 weeks, and it just that mean, because we take these deadlines seriously as well, so, and we don't want to receive the comments and then sit on them for 6 or 8 months. I think it's disrespectful for people who've actually got them in. So we aim to get a summary in place about 6 weeks later. We then do detailed analysis by issue that we discuss with the boards. But I think the summary, I think, would be the sort of thing you're looking at, and we wondered whether we should make that available as a separate summary on our website, so it's absolutely clear that anybody can grab rather than try to hunt through and find a particular observer note. And related to that is that we don't always receive, as well as the comment letters, there are often some areas or some groups of people who don't submit a lot. I can't remember which project it was. We had one from a user representative, and that was it. So often we supplement that through some of the other outreach, and it's whether we should try and almost do, this is almost like an outreach summary, comment letters and outreach. The difficulty is the comment letters are very important. It's a very formal part of the process, so we don't want to necessarily fudge that and want to make these separate as well, but we at least need to identify, and I think we do, in our comment letters where we're missing some opinions from some demographics, and that's what our outreach is designed to supplement this process.
Alan, I think that's actually a very helpful suggestion. I think it would be very useful to have a sort of one page or a couple of pages summary. And I think your comment about sort of the number of letters you get from particular groups is also relevant. And it's encouraging to see the ISB doing more workshops and more sort of flexible, informal ways of outreach. It would be good to get at least a flavour of that captured. So you might well be saying, we had one formal letter from a particular user group, but in our outreach activities, we found sentiment amongst users in North America was here, and in Japan it tended to be more there, and just that sort of flavour. Because again, and as Malcolm says, I mean, I think all of us actually have to spend quite a lot of time trying to explain where particular IASB decisions sort of come from, why they are in the direction they are, and particularly perhaps if we've spent time talking to our own clients or internal sort of people, and they've violently disagreed with the direction of travel, and then we're coming back and saying, well, I know you disagreed and we did feed that in, and actually it's still come out here. You need then to have some sort of explanation as to why the decision was ultimately made. So that would be very helpful.
Just a question on the outreach efforts on the major MOU projects. Is it the thinking that the boards will have coordinated outreach efforts in terms of field testing and roundtables, so that a preparer knows that
the
voice is getting heard by both boards, or can choose how to participate?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have a group of board and senior staff that meets between us and the FASB. The basic idea is that the world's our constituency, and for the US, for the FASB it actually is the US, but it means that we still go to the US. We had quite successful outreach, I think, for RevRec and leases across there, and we keep the FASB informed about what we're doing and invite them to participate in most those events. We've had FASB representatives across speaking to Lease Europe, for example, so we combine where we can, but we don't go and sit on each other's meetings for everything. Roundtables are all shared. Even with consolidations, what the FASB is going to be doing is taking, and there's another version again, a staff draft of our consoles. Standard will be ready at the end of August, but we're not going to finalise to the end of the year, but the FASB will use that to test the waters as to whether or not they should go out with an ED. They're going to hold a series of roundtables in the US. We'll participate. So every roundtable will always have representatives of both.
Thank you.
But we are much more informal than before. So now we go look for people who don't have an opinion expressed, but we think they should most likely have an opinion, or people have expressed opinion, we go there. At least, for example, we've had more than 200 events like that, quite informal. And then we inform each other what we are doing. It's not that we have a common program apart from then a couple of things like roundtables. It's much more small activities, and I think that's a very efficient way of working.
Okay, well, we've got an opportunity later to sort of continue agenda-related discussions when we're going to discuss post-2011 items, but I think perhaps we should move on. Denise?